So if you're living with someone who is shedding, who's got these integration events, they're producing spike protein forever. Of course, they're developing blood clots and myocarditis as well years later. But now they're shedding the spike protein to the person, and now you're being exposed every single day. So over time, that might do enough damage that maybe you do develop cancer and you're unvaccinated, but you're in a household where you're exposed to shedding all the time. Maybe over long term, it can cause cancer in you as well, and you're unvaccinated. So this is actually where the research is really focused right now, is proving integration. This is what Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Latipo has raised concerns about a month or two ago, when he called for the halt of these vaccines to be removed from the market, because he asked the FDA about the risk of integration, about the DNA contamination. They refused to give him an answer. Health Canada has refused to give an answer as well to the public. And the European Medicines Agency has refused. Now, they've all acknowledged that the DNA contamination is there and that they know about it. What they say is that it doesn't cause any clinical problems. It's not clinically relevant. And the fascinating thing is that Kevin McKernan discovered that there's an SV40 promoter, or simian virus 40 promoter. Now, everyone says, well, you know, that's an oncogenic virus that can cause cancer. Well, it's only a piece of it, but it's in these DNA plasmids. It's in the DNA contamination. Well, apparently, one of the properties of the SV40 promoter is to deliver genetic material into the nucleus where it can easily integrate. So it actually, and it's apparently been discovered only in the Pfizer vials, not the Moderna vials. So apparently Pfizer has this special additional feature where you've got the spike protein DNA plasmids that have the entire spike protein sequence. And you've got this additional engineered sequence, this SV40 promoter, that can actually deliver the DNA contaminants into the nucleus, ensure integration into your DNA so that you're producing spike protein indefinitely. The moment this is proven and proven conclusively, and I believe it will be in the coming months, I believe it will be proven this year. That's it. That's it for the entire mRNA vaccine platform.
We are so pleased that Dr. William Mackis is joining us once again on tonight's Empower Hour. Dr. Mackis is a Canadian physician with expertise in radiology, oncology, and immunology. Tonight, he's going to be sharing his incredible knowledge of the new turbo cancers that have become prevalent since the introduction of the COVID-19 mRNA injections. He'll be discussing Big Pharma's launch of their new cancer vaccines to treat these novel cancers, and he'll be going into the details of ivermectin and treatment protocols for those who have been harmed by the injections and wish to reduce the adverse effects. This interview was pre-recorded, so there will not be a time of Q&A today. So now, my friends, I invite you to sit back and get comfortable as we listen to this very informative conversation between Tanya and Dr. William Mackis.
Well, thank you, Heather, and welcome, Dr. Mackey. It is so good to have you on the show. I have been looking forward to this Empower Hour for quite a while. It is horrifying. I hate to say it that way, but following you and your Substack with all of the announcements of the vaccine injuries from myocarditis, the sudden deaths, pilots, it makes you really hesitant to want to fly. But one of the big issues that you're addressing as well is the turbo cancers and the rising rate. I almost want to say at this point that we'd be hard pressed as individuals not to know somebody who is being reported and diagnosed to have some form of cancer. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me again.
Well, super. So what I want to do, as you and I were discussing, I want to set the stage. I myself, I'm not a physician. I'm not giving anybody any kind of medical advice. We're just providing information to our audience so that they can do the research as well. I'm just going to highlight your Substack right now because I really think it's very important that people follow you And so this would be your Substack at MackieMD. And so I just encourage people to write that down, sign up and get involved. You will receive ongoing emails from Dr. Mackie reporting on what is happening not only in Canada, but around the world. Now, to set the stage a bit, in your recent articles, you have had titles such as Ivermectin and Cancer, Treating Turbo Cancer, 7 New Studies Released in 2024, Show Ivermectin Works Against Cancer, Suggested Protocols for COVID mRNA, Vaccine-Induced Turbo Cancers. And then if you scroll down the page, here are these studies. They highlight bladder cancer, and I know that there was juvenile cancer as well.
There's gliomas, cancer, which are brain cancers, multiple myelomas, which are blood cancers. And these are just the studies that came out in 2024. There's been, you know, dozens of studies that have come out earlier in 2023 and earlier. And I've covered some of those in part one. So this has been a big two-part series that I've done on ivermectin and fenbendazole, looking at these anti-parasitic drugs that are being repurposed. Repurposed to treat cancer, because there's a tremendous body of literature, of published literature, on the effectiveness of these drugs. Now, they're cheap. They've been viciously attacked by Big Pharma. And, you know, ivermectin, of course, was used to treat as an early treatment for COVID-19 viral infection. It was very effective. And, of course, it was viciously attacked by the FDA. You know, in their Twitter post when they said, you know, you're not a cow, you're not a horse, don't take ivermectin, despite the fact that it's a human drug and, it, you know, there's been over 1 billion doses administered. It's one of the safest drugs on the market. And, you know, the person who discovered it won the Nobel Prize. And so, but it's been viciously attacked and suppressed by Big Pharma. So right. What I'm trying to do in my articles is I'm trying to give information to people and give them some options, because turbo cancer is a term that's being used to describe very aggressive cancers that people who've had at least one COVID vaccine are developing. These cancers, they behave very differently. And that's the thing. I believe we're dealing with a brand new phenomenon, a brand new category or brand new type of cancers. If you've had the COVID vaccines, and I believe this is specific to the mRNA shots. So this is specific to Pfizer and Moderna. This is where people who've had Pfizer or Moderna shots, you know, it seems they're the ones developing these cancers. You know, it's a brand new phenomenon. These genetic shots, the Pfizer and Moderna COVID vaccines, they immediately act on the immune system. And this is where I get into a lot of battles with MDs and PhDs who are in complete denial. They say, well, you know, it takes years to develop cancer. Well, not if you launch an immediate attack on your immune system. If you attack your immune system and you start messing with immune signaling and you start inactivating immune cells, you can lose cancer surveillance very quickly. And as soon as you lose cancer surveillance, you provide the environment for cancer to grow and thrive. And these cancers are extremely aggressive. They're affecting people of all ages, but mainly young people. And young people are getting hit with cancers we've never seen before. You know, you have 19-year-olds with breast cancer. You have 25-year-olds with colon cancer. Yeah, you have 30-year-olds with cholangiocarcinoma, cancers of the bile duct, which is a cancer we see in people in their 70s. And so young people are coming down with extremely aggressive cancers. The only thing in their history, medical history, is that they've had COVID-19 vaccines. They may have had 2, 3 or more. And their immune system has been damaged because they always get sick with COVID-19 or they're constantly sick with the flu. We see this in the vaccinated population, that people are constantly sick. That's a sign that their immune system has been damaged. And the moment your immune system has been damaged, you are now at a much higher risk of developing cancer.
Right. And there was something that I was reading yesterday. Actually, it was JFK Jr. had come out and he was talking about the processed foods and who's behind the processed foods. All of it was coming back to BlackRock, and that this was causing havoc to people's systems as well. And so I think between the physical attack with this so-called, I don't even want to call it a vaccine.
Well, but it's some people are calling it a gene therapy or a genetic injection, because it is a gene therapy. It should have always been classified as a gene therapy and treated as such. And we have people in the pharmaceutical industry who've given interviews before the vaccines were rolled out that say, you know, it's a gene therapy, but if we told people it was a gene therapy, no one would take it. And so they had to call it a vaccine. And in fact, they had to change the definition of what a vaccine is twice, I believe, before these were rolled out so that they could sort of fall under that umbrella.
And it was a bioweapon as well that I was trying to think of. But with gene therapy, can you explain to our viewers what is a gene therapy?
Well, you know, it's fascinating because the mRNA is a genetic, it's a piece of genetic information, or it's a genetic product. And, you know, there's so many lies that are told about it. First of all, you know, the corrupt doctors or PhDs will tell us, well, your body's full of mRNA. You consume mRNA every day. Well, no, this is different. This mRNA has been modified. One of the nucleic acids has been replaced with a pseudouridine. That's a completely artificial nucleotide that is inserted into the mRNA during the manufacturing process. And when they do this, it becomes a completely artificial molecule. And so, no, we don't have any. And when people say, well, our body's full of mRNA, and I say, well, if your body's full of artificial mRNA, then you have a serious problem. Maybe you should go see your doctor. But this is a completely artificial construct, and our bodies have never seen this before. We've never, and they're injecting this into people, and they're not injecting it as a plain molecule where it would be immediately identified by the immune system. They're putting it into lipid nanoparticles, so that shields it from the immune system. And the Nobel Prize was literally awarded for the modification that turns our normal mRNA into this artificial methylated pseudouridine mRNA. That's what the Nobel Prize was given for, to Dr. Carrico and Drew Weissman. Now, ironically, it's this modification that is also responsible for a lot of the adverse events. And it actually may be responsible for the skyrocketing cancers that we're seeing in the vaccinated as well, because there's an immediate effect on the immune system. The pseudouridine actually acts on certain receptors on immune cells, on T cells called toll-like receptors, and these are responsible for, you know, very complex immune signaling, and they either shut those off or turn them up depending, and so, you know, right away, you've got a dampening of your innate immune system. And again, this was done on purpose. They didn't want the mRNA destroyed as soon as you inject it into the body. So they do these modifications to the mRNA, completely artificial. That wins the Nobel Prize. It's responsible for most of the vaccine injuries we see. Then they put it in a lipid nanoparticle. Then they inject it into you, and it doesn't stay in the arm because the lipid nanoparticle has nothing that instructs it to stay in the arm. It ends up, you know, it could end up in, if you hit a small vessel, it can end up directly in the bloodstream. And these are the, you know, when they inject you and they don't pull back to test whether they've hit a vessel or not. Because we see, you know, they were just giving injections to thousands of people and no one was testing to see whether they hit a blood vessel or not. So there's that problem. It ends up in the bloodstream directly, or it goes through the lymphatic system and it ends up in the lymph nodes. So now, you know, we have people who let's say are being imaged for breast cancer, for example. Well, the sonographers are asking, well, did you have, you know, a vaccine? Because your lymph nodes are lighting up on the same side. Well, it's because the vaccine goes to the lymph nodes and then it ends up in the bloodstream anyways. And so about, we know from the Japanese biodistribution study that was obtained through a Freedom of Information request by Dr. Byron Bridle, that about 75% of the injection ends up in the bloodstream within a couple of hours, and then it goes all over the body.
Well, and this is why there were some people, because there was different doses, right? I remember that, was it out of Sweden or Switzerland? They had that report where it showed that there was different manufactured doses that were made available to the public. And there was one where there was no vaccine injury at all, and they figured that was a placebo. Then there was the second stage where there was injuries, such as rashes and I don't know, maybe breathing problems, etc., but nothing death-threatening. And then the final stage was responsible, was it for 71? It's been a while since I looked at the report, something like 76% of the death and injuries.
So this was a study out of Denmark. And what they had done is they had looked at the injuries, correlated them to VAERS report and specific serial numbers of particular vaccine batches. So we know that the vaccines were made in numerous batches. Each of those batches has a serial number. That is the number that actually ends up on the vaccine card. In fact, now when somebody dies suddenly, people like myself and others who are reporting on the sudden deaths, what we're looking at is we're actually looking for the serial number on the vaccine cards that people actually shared on their social media, on their Facebook, on their Instagram, and so on. So in some cases, we actually get the serial number. We can then, there's a website called howbadismybatch.com where you can actually enter the serial number and determine how many serious adverse events are documented for that serial number in VAERS, how many deaths, how many injuries, and so on. And that's what this Denmark study did. And what they identified was that, I believe it was about 5% of the vaccine batches are responsible for whatever the number is, 70 to 90% of the serious adverse events and deaths. And so these are called hot lots or bad batches. And whatever is in those batches, whether it's a much higher concentration of mRNA or DNA contamination or something else, is they're really responsible for the majority of the serious adverse events and deaths. And then you've got about 60 to 70% that cause some injuries and deaths to various degrees, as you mentioned. It's sort of it's almost like a gradient. You know, some cause less, some cause more. And it's sort of a gradient of injuries and deaths. And then there's about 30% of batches that seem to cause very few injuries and deaths. Now, it's been hypothesized that these are placebos, but there's no evidence that these are actually placebos or not. These could be, this could be something that will take much longer to manifest as adverse events. Right. Because I would tell you in about 85 to 90% of the sudden death cases that I report, and last year I reported about 5,000 of them. I've got another 2,000 sitting on my desk waiting to report. I can only get through about 15 to 20 a day, and I post those on Twitter and sometimes on Substack. I can tell you in 85 to 90% of these sudden deaths, there is no warning sign. There are no symptoms. You know, there's no chest pain, there's no blood clots, there's no cancer. It's just the person dies suddenly and there was no warning. That's why you always see these obituaries. Families are shocked. You know, brief and sudden illness, unexpected, died unexpectedly, died suddenly. And that's why the hashtag died suddenly exists, is because the obituaries are full of people who've died suddenly and unexpectedly. And so there are no warning signs in most of these sudden deaths. And you know, the fact that this is still happening in 2023 and 2024, when most people stopped taking their vaccines in 2021 or 2022, means we're looking at long-term effects of these vaccines that didn't manifest until 2 years later.
Well, I know that one of the things, because I've been at this journey for coming up to 9 years, and so I was very aware when the so-called pandemic hit that it was a fraud. And I wrote a report called Government Corruption and Colluding with a Foreign Syndicate. It's on our menu under COVID-19 at the bottom. And I was documenting everything. And then I'm meeting with the RCMP. I was told this story before, the top RCMP in British Columbia, calling for them to do an investigation by June of 2020, providing them the information. And so being in touch with them and coming into 2021 when they started ministering this. And my first one was a young girl who was just becoming a physiotherapist and with elderly people, and thought, well, I'm going to do, she called it her peeps. You know, she's going to watch out for her peeps. So she took the jab and she became paralyzed. That was early in January of 2021. Then they were all pushing the jab. And so I was in communication with them. And Bonnie Henry around April was telling pregnant women to take it. It's safe. It's effective. While we're hearing about nursing babies in the United States having bleeding intestinal problems because of it. and then Sean Muldoon in British Columbia. He ended up having clotting and lost 8 feet of his intestines, and just almost in tears at times with the police, with the top RCMP saying, do something, they're murdering people. And yep. they're going to have a lot to answer for, because as you were saying, we're continuing to see these deaths, people being diagnosed with these problems. And it seemed at the beginning, a lot of it was the blood clotting. And then we started hearing about the heart attacks. And I'm not sure if the heart attacks were maybe just, you know, swept under the rug at the time, that they were probably happening. But yeah. it's like, oh my goodness, they had a heart attack. You know, they were 56 years old, you know, that happens. And, you know, they've just disguised it. We talk about, as you were saying, the creation of this. And, you know, at first they were saying it was an experimental vaccine. It needs to be approved. It needs to be fast-tracked. It needs to be relabeled. But it was never an experiment. And that's why I refer to it as a bioweapon. They knew exactly, this took a lot of planning. They knew exactly what this was going to do. And so can we now, I think what I'll do is I'm going to share a couple of headlines, and then I want to go into, as we were saying, I brought up the headline here that you've announced this benbendazole. So we've got the ivermectin. We'll talk more about that. But these are the headlines that are making front page for the last while. 5 cancer vaccines to watch in 2024. I mean, this is in November. It goes back even a couple of years. And so we're looking at Moderna and Merck. Now, Merck used to be a producer, I understand, of ivermectin. I have headline reports where they came out at the very beginning of, you know, at this as a treatment for COVID, and saying, no, you know what, ivermectin shouldn't be used for treating COVID symptoms. And now here they are in bed with Moderna, creating a cancer vaccine. I mean, here it is, headline news, Moderna plots lung cancer trial for Merck-partnered vax. Maybe I'll have you explain what Keytruda's is in just a moment. Moderna developed with Merck. But here, look at this. Isn't that something? This came out in December. Shares of Moderna have soared to around 14% on Thursday on the news that a personalized cancer vaccine produced in partnership with Merck reduced the risk of late-stage melanoma by 49%. Well, who wouldn't want to have shares in that? But isn't it all just so convenient the way that this has unfolded? So we'll stop sharing here, and then let's just maybe have a conversation. I mean, this is so sinister. I don't know. You know, I don't even want to ask how these people sleep at night, because this is evil, pure evil. And jail is too good. Jail is too good for these individuals.
I've written a number of articles on this, and I've actually written an article discussing the partnership between Moderna and Merck. And of course, Merck had a patent on ivermectin. Now that patent has expired. But what's fascinating about this partnership between Moderna and Merck is that early in the pandemic, as you described, Merck came out and said, don't use ivermectin for COVID-19. And everyone was surprised, and no one understood why Merck, which had a patent on ivermectin, it could still certainly sell ivermectin even these days, even off patent, and could make a lot of money. Why was Merck sabotaging its own drug? Why was Merck sabotaging ivermectin? Well, 2 years later, we have the answer. And the answer is that Merck has a 50-50 partnership with Moderna. I've looked into the details of this. This is a 50-50 partnership on an mRNA cancer vaccine that Moderna is developing. Now, they claim they're developing it together. They're running the clinical trials together. And it's clear from one of these, you can go to one of these mainstream media news stories that talk about this, is that Merck will get 50% of the profits of this cancer vaccine that they are developing with Moderna. Now, they're doing clinical trials. I believe they started those clinical trials in 2023 in Australia for the melanoma vaccine. And that's a very fascinating story, because I'd covered a story about a very famous Australian pathologist in Sydney who runs a big cancer center. Called Professor Richard Scollier, who he's in his 50s, S-C-O-L-Y-E-R, and he developed probably the most aggressive brain cancer you can have, a glioblastoma with poor features, and of course, fully vaccinated. So there's a high probability that he has a turbo cancer. He has a cancer that was caused by the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines that he was forced to take as a physician to keep his job. So he develops this extremely aggressive brain cancer. And then instead of looking into what may have caused his cancer, he basically partners with Big Pharma and he goes to Moderna and Merck and he says, look, give me your treatment. And I know you're doing it for melanoma, but do it for me and do it for my brain cancer. And they agree. So they make a big announcement. So there's a big press conference and everything. And he becomes the first person in the world who is treated with this Moderna Merck mRNA cancer vaccine for his brain cancer. And I believe it's off trial because it's a very unique situation. They're doing it just for him. They're giving him a personalized treatment. And of course, that's how they're advertising these cancer treatments, is that they're going to be tailored to you specifically. So what they'll do is they will take a sample of your tumor. They will run it through their sequencing analysis to find certain sequences that they could then create mRNAs from. They create those mRNAs and then they inject that cocktail of mRNAs, presumably in lipid nanoparticles, back into you. And so you get a personalized cancer treatment tailored to you. Now, whether it actually works or not, God only knows. And if they do the trials, I'm sure the trials are going to be fixed one way or another to get the outcome they want. But bottom line is that this is what they see as their big money-making potential. And so, it looks like, I did another article. I've done several articles on how now the big pharmaceutical companies are all buying up the smaller cancer drug makers. And so Pfizer for $43 billion by Seagen. Novartis is getting into cancer. Johnson & Johnson is getting into cancer. BioNTech getting into cancer. Moderna, of course, already pushing the mRNA vaccines. And it almost seems like they've sort of carved up the market, the cancer market, so that each of them will have different drugs to offer or maybe different cancers to treat. But they're spending, I believe last year, the pharmaceutical companies spent over $100 billion. That's just the top 10 acquisitions in cancer were over $100 billion that they're buying up. And they're buying up these companies at a sometimes 100% premium. They're literally pouring money into this because, as Pfizer CEO tells us, 1/3 of all people will get cancer. Now, I always say 1/3 of vaccinated people will get cancer because, that's, I think, what he actually means. Because he knows his product is causing cancer. And he says this with a certainty in all his interviews. And he says, and Pfizer will be there to profit from it. And this will be their number one moneymaker from 2025 until 2030.
Oh, man, it just makes my blood boil at the level of corruption, like I say, and how evil this is. But sometimes inside as well, I'm thinking, I wonder if they have ivermectin in those shots with a cocktail of other things that, natural.
So you actually bring up a fantastic point, because what they're doing in those trials in Australia is they're combining the mRNA with another drug, a drug that may actually have an effect, like the Keytruda. And so then it's like, well, is it the mRNA that's treating the cancer, or is it this extra drug that they're adding, right? And so they're doing this. They'll add things in maybe a cocktail, or they'll throw a couple of things in there, maybe to get an effect. And then, of course, they'll assign all the benefits to the mRNA. I mean, we've seen the clinical trial fraud that took place, with the COVID vaccines. I expect no less for the mRNA cancer vaccines is mm-hmm. They'll fix up the efficacy, it'll be 99% effective or whatever. And because they're cancer patients, they'll assume that they'll be just happy to have some treatment. Now, if it's a vaccinated person who's suffering from turbo cancer, these are extremely aggressive cancers. And I just wanted to quickly outline the features of turbo cancer, because I've been, writing extensively on this. Once you've had COVID vaccines, and they've damaged your immune system, and you develop a cancer, and we're calling it turbo cancer. These cancers are presenting at a very late stage. They're usually presenting at stage four. And it's shocking to the families. It's shocking, obviously, to the person who's been diagnosed with the cancer. Usually no warning signs. You know, by the time they start feeling unwell, bam, it's already stage four. So it presents at a very late stage. Young people are coming down with cancers that we've only seen in old people, older people. And these cancers are highly resistant to standard chemotherapy and radiation therapy regimens. This is why all the pharmaceutical companies are investing into cutting-edge cancer treatments, or whatever they can call cutting-edge, is because they know that these cancers, these turbo cancers, don't respond to standard treatments. And so you need to have, and this is where the money-making comes in, is that they will offer you a cutting-edge treatment. They'll call it cutting edge. They'll say, look, this was recently developed, it whatever the efficacy is. And that's how they're going to make their money. But these cancers are hardly resistant to standard treatments because the treatments are not treating the underlying problem, which is a destroyed immune system. If you don't treat the destroyed immune system, you're not going to touch the cancer, because the cancer has such a friendly environment to grow in, that you can't get these cancers under control in the standard way, just hitting them with chemo or radiation. It doesn't seem to have any effect. And the prognosis is extremely poor. However, yes, there are people who will die within weeks, days, or even hours of being diagnosed with a turbo cancer, but the majority of people will fight 6 to 12 months on average. That is the prognosis. Now, oncologists are giving people prognosis of 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and then the person will die 6 months later or 3 months later. And that's because the oncologists don't understand the phenomenon of turbo cancer, either out of ignorance or they simply don't want to lose their jobs. They will not make an association with the mRNA vaccines. And so you have a phenomenon, a turbo cancer phenomenon, where these things have very poor prognosis. But let's say a person has typically 6 to 12 months to fight. Well, during that 6 to 12 months, Pfizer will offer you a cancer treatment, Moderna will offer you a cancer treatment, Johnson & Johnson will offer you a cancer treatment, and they will drain your bank account while they're killing you. And that is basically the business model that they have set up for themselves.
Wow. And so with your research, because, you know, as it reads, your history here is in radiology, oncology, and immunology, and you were treating many cancer patients. And I'm hoping that our viewers, if they don't know more about you, to research you as well, because you had a highly successful cancer research facility in Alberta, which got basically shut down, you speaking out on this now. So I'm understanding from what you're saying that this new turbo cancer is not maybe a cancer that you would have seen and the patients that you would have been treating formerly. And so with your new research, with the fenbendazole, the ivermectin, and as you say, it's like this mRNA injection has caused this place for cancers to not only just thrive, but to just ravage a person's body. So what can I call them aggressive steps that people are being diagnosed with this? Because first of all, the Moderna and Pfizer and the rest of them are now have the attention of somebody who is in an extremely vulnerable position. They will do anything to get whatever treatment to try to save their lives. And with the knocks against the other natural treatments, ivermectin's been around for over 35 years. As you had mentioned, it's a very safe and effective drug. It's treated so many different ailments. But how are you seeing, and what advice would you have? I know, like, we're not going to give medical advice to the people on the show. Maybe what can I say for people to research and look into, that if they've been diagnosed with this aggressive cancer, what actions can they possibly take right now?
So, you know, I've thought a lot about this in the past year, and it really comes down to now. And it's going to take a while for oncologists to pick up on this. Now, you've got, you know, Professor Angus Dalglish in the United Kingdom, very senior oncologist, speaking out about this, about the turbo cancers that he's seeing in his patients. Obviously, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Pierre Corey, Dr. Ryan Cole, Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, you know, there are many doctors who recognize this phenomenon, but oncologists, by and large, are completely ignoring this phenomenon, which is why people are just dying from cancer, and the oncologists have nothing to offer them, because once the standard chemo or radiation fails, the oncologist throws up their hands and says, well, unless they have some kind of a clinical trial, and even those usually don't work, the sort of these new immunotherapies that they're trying in colon cancer or lung cancer, those don't seem to work either. Or at most, they'll buy you a few extra months. And so the oncologists have nothing else to offer. They send the patients home to die. And what you'll see is you'll see a 25-year-old being sent to hospice care because the oncologists have given up. They have nothing left to offer. And so it really comes down to now the first question you really have to ask whenever you're faced with a cancer diagnosis is, have you had COVID vaccines or not? If you're unvaccinated and you're coming down with cancer, you may have a lot more time than someone who has been vaccinated and gets the same type of cancer. So the cancers that I'm seeing from the COVID vaccines, I can tell you the top five cancers I'm seeing are lymphoma. That is just an absolute tsunami of lymphomas, brain cancers, the glioblastomas. Those are extremely aggressive, more than typically. And then breast cancer, colon cancer, and lung cancer. Those are the top five that are just exploding. And again, younger and younger population. Then, of course, we're seeing leukemias. Those are probably the most aggressive turbo cancers of all of them are the leukemias. And I'm starting to see them now in vaccinated children. Vaccinated children, anywhere sort of from ages 5 to 18, are now developing very aggressive leukemias. This is again, it's very controversial. Nobody wants to hear it. But, you know, if you've vaccinated your children, this is a risk. This is a risk that they might develop leukemias. Sarcomas, extremely aggressive sarcomas of all types. You know, there's various types of sarcomas. There's bone sarcomas, there's rhabdomyosarcomas, you know, there's uterine sarcomas that people are coming down with. Skin cancers, but particularly melanomas. And then you've got the testicular cancers, ovarian cancers, and cervical cancers. Now, and we know that the lipid nanoparticles accumulate in the testes and ovaries. We know that they accumulate in the bone marrow. So that's where all the blood cancers coming, the lymphomas and leukemias. Now, we know that they accumulate in breast milk. That could be maybe why we're seeing an explosion of breast cancers. It's basically anywhere these lipid nanoparticles go, they exert a local effect, potentially a local carcinogenic effect. And then, of course, we've got the systemic effect from the damaged immune system. So that's the main difference. If you've been vaccinated, you have less time to act, which means you have a worse prognosis and you have to get on it right away. Now, for every cancer patient, I always say you have to have an alternate treatment plan. Now, that doesn't mean that you refuse chemo or you refuse radiation. You have to weigh the risks. You have to weigh the pros and balances of every medical treatment. And I'm not here to tell people don't take chemo or don't take radiation. You know, chemo and radiation are good in some cases. You know, the response rates are very high. The response rate, for example, in certain lymphomas, if it is 90%, 95%, and, you know, the adverse events are fairly low, you may want to strongly consider taking the standard chemotherapy regimen, see how you respond and so on. But you have to have an alternate plan ready. Now, especially in people with turbo cancer, you have to jump on an alternate plan right away. You have to start adding something else. The most important thing you can do as a cancer patient is eliminate sugar from your diet. And I would go as far as to say eliminate sugar and flour from your diet, but certainly eliminating sugar from your diet is extremely important. That's the first and most important step you can take. Then you have to look at things that may actually treat some of these extremely aggressive turbo cancers. And this is where I've done a lot of research on ivermectin and fenbendazole. Interestingly, both are antiparasitic drugs, but there's a tremendous amount of research going into how they affect cancer cells. And I can tell you just very quickly, I'm going to list through some of the mechanisms of action of ivermectin on cancer and then some of fenbendazole on cancer. So, for example, there's dozens of papers on ivermectin inducing tumor cell death It actually stimulates apoptosis, autophagy. Ivermectin inhibits tumor growth and proliferation. This is through the mTOR pathway inhibition or MAPK pathway inhibition. It's ivermectin stops cancer cell migration, invasion, and metastases. So there's mechanisms for that. It causes cancer cell mitochondrial dysfunction. It inhibits cancer stem cells. Now, cancer stem cells are implicated in tumor initiation, but also recurrence. So we hear a lot about people who've had cancers in remission, suddenly they come back and the cancer is extremely aggressive and their cancer has come back. Well, ivermectin will stop some of these cancer stem cells that can actually cause the tumors to come back. So very fascinating mechanisms. There's a few more. Ivermectin also inhibits angiogenesis. So this is the tumor's ability to create the blood vessels that it needs to feed itself. And, you know, ivermectin also actually alters gene expression for certain genes that end up helping inhibiting cancer progression. Ivermectin also overcomes tumor multidrug resistance. So you have tumors that, let's say, you know, you give chemo, but then the tumor, after a little while, develops resistance to the drugs that you're giving the patient. And so ivermectin can actually sort of reverse some of this resistance. So that's why in some studies, they're giving it with standard chemotherapy. Now, Big Pharma doesn't want to acknowledge that ivermectin has all these anti-cancer mechanisms and that it could treat cancer on its by itself, because ivermectin is dirt cheap. It's off patent. No one's going to make any money. Big Pharma isn't going to make billions of dollars. So now imagine Pfizer has spent $43 billion acquiring drug cancer company Seagen. And then if they find out that people can treat themselves with high-dose ivermectin for dollars, you know, for a few dollars per treatment, well, no one's going to make any money, right? And so cancer is all about making money. So that's ivermectin. And the research points to a high dose of ivermectin being effective with all, you know, with all these effects on cancer that I just listed. Now, what is a high dose of ivermectin? Well, it's about 5 to 10 times the dose that was used for COVID-19 for its antiviral properties. And so I'll give you an example. You know, I believe for COVID-19, the standard dose was 0.2 to 0.4 milligrams per kilogram. And so for a 60 kilo patient, you are looking at ivermectin 12 milligrams to 24 milligrams to treat COVID-19. So you could get ivermectin 12 milligram pills, right? And you could take one or two of those, or you could get the 6 milligram pills or 3 milligram pills, whatever you can get your hands on. I know it's a lot easier to get your hands on ivermectin in the United States than it is in Canada. People are forced to import ivermectin from India and sort of sneak it through the customs because customs has been confiscating it. So now you're using ivermectin 12 to 24 milligrams for COVID-19, and it's very effective. Dr. Pierre Corey is the expert on this. He's written a book on ivermectin, and sort of, you know, he goes into a lot of detail about the effectiveness, all the studies that have been proven effective and so on. And Big Pharma has put a lot of effort in to try to suppress ivermectin for use in COVID-19. Well, for cancer, you got to multiply that by 5 to 10 times. So now we're talking 1 milligram per kilogram. So for a 60 kilogram, 1 to 2 milligrams per kilogram. So for a 60 kilogram person, that dose would be 60 to 120 milligrams. So as I talked about 12 to 24 for COVID-19, for cancer, you're talking 60 to 120. It's a higher dose. It's, you know, several pills a day. So you're talking 5 to 10 pills a day. Or you could take the liquid version. You know, I'm not going to go into that. People know what that means. Or the paste version. So people can figure that out for themselves. But as long as you know the milligrams, and it's cheap. It's dirt cheap. It could literally cost you dollars per treatment. And, you know, you do this maybe for a few weeks, for a few months. You monitor with imaging, whether it's, you know, CT, ultrasound, or even PET CT, and you can actually monitor the straight shrinkage of the tumors. And, you know, you can do this side by side with your conventional treatments, or you could, you know, refuse conventional treatment and go the alternative route. But this is something that you can actually offer to end-stage cancer patients who are being basically given up on by their oncologist. And because the turbo cancers usually present at stage four, you got to hit it right away. You have to get on this right away. So ivermectin is one of the treatments that I've been writing extensively about. The other one is fenbendazole. Now, fenbendazole is fascinating because it's also an antiparasitic, but it's got different mechanisms of action. And I'll mention a couple of these because they're really, really fascinating. Fenbendazole actually increases your levels of P53 tumor suppressor. Now, P53 is a tumor suppressor that suppresses cancer, and it's damaged in, I would say, the majority of cancer cases. P53 is damaged in some ways. Either P53 levels are low or the gene is damaged. And actually, one of the proposed mechanisms of how turbo cancers may be arising is an interaction between the spike protein and the P53 gene. There was one paper published that actually showed that the spike protein damages the P53 gene and basically damages your tumor suppressor, which is implicated in many cancers. So fenbendazole actually can reverse that and can stimulate an increase in your P53 levels. It also inhibits glucose transport and the cancer's utilization of glucose to grow. So, you know, remember how I said you have to eliminate sugar from your diet because sugar feeds cancer, and most cancers really thrive on sugar as a source of energy. Well, fenbendazole actually blocks the cancer from being able to take in sugar into the tumor and utilize it as an energy source. So it inhibits tumor growth in that way. It also messes with microtubules. And so microtubules are implicated when cells are dividing. So they need the microtubules, you know, to sort of spread the chromosomes apart. And now once they're spread apart, once the nuclear material has been replicated, now you've got two cells and you need microtubules for efficient replication. And that's what cancer cells do. They divide rapidly. Well, fenbendazole actually disrupts microtubule formation in these rapidly dividing cells. So again, you have inhibition of cancer replication. Now, of course, fenbendazole also induces apoptosis, autophagy, also inhibits angiogenesis. So this is, again, the tumor's ability to create new blood vessels. Now, no one is telling patients this. Your oncologist will not tell you this. Your family doctor will not tell you this. Doctors are not telling patients about these properties. Now, fenbendazole is a veterinary drug. It's most commonly called a dog dewormer, or used as a dog dewormer. Interestingly, though, it has been used in human clinical trials. And there is a gentleman who had stage 4 lung cancer before COVID-19 who cured his lung cancer taking this basically veterinary medication because he was sent home to die. He was supposed to be dead within a month or two. His name is Joe Tippins. And his friend told him, hey, listen, we have this drug. We're using it as an antiparasitic. But, you know, in one study, it accidentally cured all the cancers in the animals and they weren't even looking for it. And they discovered it by accident. Why don't you just try that? He tried it, cured his cancer. He's still alive to this day. This was years ago. And so that's kind of how it came into prominence. So I believe John Hopkins actually started a clinical trial looking at fenbendazole to treat cancer. But because it's so cheap, Big Pharma abandoned it, said, oh, well, it has some side effects, and they just flat out abandoned it. Now, they created a version of it called mebendazole. That one is FDA approved, and it's like 100 times more expensive. And so now Big Pharma's happy they've got mebendazole. It can also treat cancer. Now, mebendazole, when you get the non-generic version of it, it'll cost you like anywhere from $200 to $400 a pill, but you can get a generic version of it from India for like 50 cents a pill. So again, you have to be creative. You have to figure out ways of getting access to these medications. So whether you go with fenbendazole or mebendazole, both of them work against cancer with these mechanisms because they're both in the same family. They have almost identical structures. It's just that Big Pharma needed to make money on a version of this. So, you know, this has been going viral. I can tell you my fenbendazole article, actually Joe Rogan was reading my article on fenbendazole on his show. He was struggling with all the medical terms. And I, you know, I've been telling people recently, like, get me on Joe Rogan's show so I could actually like help him pronounce all of these medical terms and so on. But you know, it's ivermectin and fenbendazole have shown an ability to treat extremely aggressive cancers, like the brain cancers, like the colon cancers, the pancreatic cancers, the extremely aggressive versions of them. These can actually treat and treat successfully. Now, again, Big Pharma will not do the clinical trials. They will not allow clinical trials, human clinical trials, to be done. Or if they do clinical trials, they'll mix it with some other chemotherapy, and then they'll give all the benefits. They'll ascribe all the benefits to the chemo. So, but this is something that people can get themselves if you're proactive. Like I said, these are dollars per dose, a few dollars per dose, and you can take them for a few months. People have been taking them, and they have seen tumor shrinkage or elimination of cancer completely. Dr. Tess Lowry from the World Council for Health, she has experience with several patients who've cured their cancers with, I forget if it was ivermectin or fenbendazole. I have to go back now, and I often mix the two now. But again, and you could monitor even your tumor marker levels when you're taking these. So, for example, if you have ovarian cancer, you could monitor CA125, or if you have colon cancer, you can monitor your CEA levels. If you have prostate cancer, you can monitor your PSA levels. So, people have taken low doses of ivermectin or fenbendazole, and their PSA levels have dropped. Visit after doctor visit, showing elimination of tumors. So you have to be proactive, but I'm trying to put this information out there and give hope and give something to these patients who are coming down with turbo cancers, stage four, they've got months to live, and doctors are sending them home to die. And of course, starting in 2025, we're going to have Pfizer offering cancer drugs and making money. We're going to have Moderna offering mRNA cancer vaccines. And whether these things work or not is very highly debatable, because we're talking about companies that have engaged in fraud with the COVID vaccine. Why wouldn't they repeat the same fraud with the cancer drugs that they're offering?
Yeah. Well, not only fraud, but mass murder. I just have to say it. There's no other way around it, right? It's just, as I keep saying throughout the show, so evil, especially for those of us who have our eyes open and
I can tell you,
let me just
sort of finish on this point. What's probably going to happen, because again, this is the model in oncology. Whenever you see, oncology doesn't cure cancer. Now, we were curing cancers in my cancer program. It was a cutting edge treatment. That's why the FDA sat on it for 20 years and wouldn't approve it. But oncology doesn't cure cancer. It usually treats cancer. And so there's money in the treatment, not the cure. And so what I foresee with these treatments, that cancer treatments that Pfizer is going to offer or Moderna is going to offer, they're going to say, oh, well, we'll give you an additional 6 months of life, or we'll give you an additional 12 months of life if you take our expensive drugs. And that's going to be the model. As someone with a prognosis of 6 months, maybe they'll live to 12 months, maybe they'll live to 18 months, but you're going to die on their drugs. You're going to die on the Pfizer drugs. You're going to die on the Moderna drugs. You're going to die on the Johnson & Johnson cancer drugs. They may prolong your life for a few months. They'll make money while they prolong your life for a little bit, but none of these are going to cure. The only cures you can actually expect is if you're going to take matters into your own hands, set up an alternative treatment plan. This is just a part of it. I gave examples, ivermectin or fenbendazole. Some people are using high doses of melatonin. Some people are using high doses of vitamin C, like vitamin C IV infusions, for example. Some people are using medicinal mushrooms like turkey tail mushrooms or chaga mushrooms. Some people are looking at certain foods or fruits like soursop or apricot kernels. People are looking at certain supplements like quercetin or olive leaf extract, which has tremendous anti-cancer properties, or black cumin seed, black seed oil. So there, you could set up a whole regimen for yourself that includes drugs like ivermectin, fenbendazole. It includes certain foods. It includes certain mushrooms and so on. You could set this up for yourself, and you can actually cure these cancers and not have to rely on these drug companies that are going to prolong your suffering or are going to maybe give you a few extra months, but you will ultimately die on their drugs.
Yeah, as you were speaking, I'm going to be watching this video again, and the information you have given, Dr. Mackey, is just absolutely so helpful. I think it's going to bring people some hope. But as you were talking about fenbendazole, I had not heard about the increased levels of P53 and how the spike proteins could be affecting that. That's the first time, yeah. But it does make sense. Sugar as well is something that has been marketed for a long time. It is so many of the processed products that we're eating, yeah. And it eats away at your body. So a good, healthy diet. I've heard that when taking ivermectin, I have a dear family member who struggles with heart issues, had not had to take any medication for it for probably 15 years. And once this person is unvaccinated, but they are having terrible problems by being around people who have been vaccinated. It is, yeah. It is no longer of a, are you really being affected by that or not? It's 100%. And so when that happens, they are treated right away with ivermectin, high doses of vitamin D and C. And I tell you, it turns it around. I've watched this been going on for the last year and a half as I've been supporting this person. And it is phenomenal how it works. And you know, that it is being held back. My, again, another family member had ordered ivermectin. That was about a year and a half ago. And sure enough, CBSA, they held it up. It's never been seen. It was paid for. There's no refund. And they confiscated it. Now, there are equine facilities, those that are in the business of horses and individuals, where this product can be found as well. And fenbendazole, same thing, as there are some pharmacies and individuals that provide this, but I would almost say stock up, because the government is always trying to prohibit this. But I love the headline news report. It was March 22nd that I had seen it. It comes out and it says, lawsuit drops bombshell on FDA's Orwellian lie about ivermectin. In a massive win for truth and medical freedom, the FDA has to remove all social media content and consumer advisories on ivermectin usage because, of course, they were discrediting it. Dr. McCullough has mentioned, Dr. McCullough previously said the FDA should be sued for misleading the public by spreading misinformation on ivermectin's ability to treat COVID-19, causing unnecessary deaths. And now, you know, we're going to be seeing the same thing, not only on so-called COVID-19, but cancer and other serious side effects from the vax. And that includes for shedding. Do you have anything that you could add about the shedding? I mean, people will say, oh, that's conspiracy theory. But we have, you know, a very tremendously loved chapter leader who was not vaxxed, not jabbed, and had sold her place and in her 60s and had to move in with her mom and sister who were double jabbed and boosted. And within days of being there, had started to bleed, went through clotting, was eventually diagnosed with cancer, but it came so suddenly. And so she's had surgery and she is taking the treatments. I think the dosage were in question, but you've provided a lot of helpful information. She has good people that deal in natural health that she's in touch with as well. And so we're hoping and praying for a very good outcome there. But I'm hearing about this more and more. So what do you have to say about the shedding?
Sure. I just want to circle back to when you were talking about the suppression of ivermectin, how the FDA would try to discredit it. So what's fascinating, when you look into that time period in sort of early to mid 2020, there was a war on anything that could help people fight COVID-19. There was a war on ivermectin. There was a war on hydroxychloroquine. There was a war on vitamin D. And some of the early studies that had actually shown vitamin D was effective, even for hospitalized patients, some of those studies were forced retracted. You know, the authors were threatened and they were actually forced to retract these studies. And there was a war on Artemisia annua as well, which is one of these things that binds the spike protein and prevents it from doing damage as well. So there was an attack on anything that could have helped people fight COVID-19, which is fascinating. Now, of course, the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine got the most attention because those were actually drugs that were FDA approved, very safe, had been used for many years, and in the case of hydroxychloroquine for decades. And so, of course, and were easily accessible. You know, you could get those drugs very easily, at least initially, before the crackdown. So those are the ones that they really fought a war. Big Pharma and, of course, the corrupt political system, they waged a war to try to suppress these drugs and supplements and make sure people, you know, didn't take them and were actually forced to take the vaccines instead, or were pressured into the or fear-mongered into the vaccine rollout, because that's ultimately what it was about. It was about rolling out these toxic vaccines, which, of course, you know, many people have made money off. Big Pharma has made hundreds of billions of dollars off these failed toxic genetic products. Now, when we're talking about shedding, shedding is real. It's a real phenomenon, and it's a phenomenon actually described by Pfizer in their clinical trial protocols. Now, they don't call it shedding. They call it environmental exposure through inhalation or skin contact. And they were very concerned about pregnant women being exposed to their product, not through injection, but through inhalation or skin contact. Well, what is that? That's shedding. That's you're either breathing in particles, the lipid nanoparticles or exosomes that have the mRNA or the spike protein, or you're being exposed to bodily fluids that have either the lipid nanoparticles, exosomes with the mRNA, or exosomes with the spike protein. And those you're going to be exposed through sweat, through urine, feces, and other bodily fluids. And so shedding is real. Now, the shedding is most intense if you've had your shot recently. So as you get the injection in the shoulder and it makes its way to your bloodstream, and as I said, at least 75% of the injection ends up in the bloodstream after several hours, you start shedding it through your bodily fluids right away. And so initially you're shedding the lipid nanoparticle with the mRNA. You're shedding basically, you know, the vaccine product, if you will. And that has been discovered that you can shed that for several days, maybe up to a week. Then what happens is these lipid nanoparticles are dumping the mRNA into your cells all over the body. Well, some cells may push that stuff right back out, but what they'll do is there'll be this sort of process called like endocytosis, where your cells will actually repackage the mRNA and push it back out into the bloodstream to try to get rid of it. So now you've got mRNA that's packaged in extracellular vesicles or exosomes. So these are basically your own body's lipid nanoparticles, and these are circulating through the bloodstream. And if they're small enough, you could actually breathe them out from the lungs as they get into the capillaries in the lungs, and you can actually breathe them out, or they get released through bodily fluids. And apparently, because the mRNA has been detected in the bloodstream for up to a month after getting your vaccine, then you could be shedding these exosomes with the mRNA for up to a month. And then comes the spike protein. And now, if your cells actually start producing the spike protein gets put on the surface of the cell. And again, if the cell is kind of pinching off part of the surface and sends those spike proteins into the bloodstream, and now you're shedding those in extracellular vesicles or exosomes, well, you could be shedding those for at least 6 months, maybe longer. We don't know, because researchers have only looked up to 6 months. And they've discovered that, yes, you could be shedding this 6 months later after your last injection. And
well,
so
I was just going to say that I just read an article. I can't remember if it was this morning or last night, that they're now saying up to 5 years. But when I had Dr. McCullough on the show previously, we were talking about this issue. It wasn't that long ago. And at that time, he said, because it's all so new, we can say up to 6 months that people would be shedding. But now that you know that we've got a couple of years behind us, we can see that even with the people that have taken the injections, there's one nurse on Twitter who's gone a bit viral, and she is so outraged by her vaccine injury that she is constantly being diagnosed and treated for new ailments. And so every time she goes, she's providing her actual medical information to
Lindsay.
Prove,
I believe her name is Lindsay. Yeah,
that's it. Yes. And so she's showing what's happening in her system actively. And so my concern is, I had posted on,
there's an additional element to this. So what I've just told you is sort of what I can back up with published research. Now there's more. And the additional element to this is that there's DNA contamination in all the vaccines. This has been proven by Kevin McKernan, by Philip Buchholz. This has been confirmed by researchers in Germany, Japan, all over the world. David Speaker is another one in Canada who confirmed DNA contamination of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Now, the problem with this DNA contamination is that it is virtually a certainty that these billions of particles of DNA plasmids and fragmented DNA that are present in every single vial of Pfizer or Moderna because of the faulty manufacturing process, that there's been integration of those DNA fragments, because DNA integrates very easily into our DNA or the DNA of our microbes, let's say. And once you get integration events, you now get spike protein production forever. Right, this is now permanent. It's permanent in your genome. You're now a spike protein producing factory forever. Now, integration hasn't been proven yet, but it's virtually a certainty that this is happening. And some people are working on this furiously right now to prove that integration is taking place in people who've been vaccinated. The moment this is proven, we would explain a lot of the long-term effects. Because why are people producing spike protein years later, right? And there are people who have detectable spike protein levels two years later. And so this would explain the long-term production of spike protein. It would also explain long-term shedding as well, because if you're producing spike protein indefinitely, that means you're shedding spike protein indefinitely as well. So if you're living with someone who is shedding, who's got these integration events, they're producing spike protein forever. Of course, they're developing blood clots and myocarditis as well years later. But now they're shedding the spike protein to the person, and now you're being exposed every single day. So over time, that might do enough damage that maybe you do develop cancer and you're unvaccinated, but you're in a household where you're exposed to shedding all the time, maybe over long-term. It can cause cancer in you as well, and you're unvaccinated. So this is actually where the research is really focused right now, is proving integration. This is what Florida Surgeon General Dr. Joseph Latipo has raised concerns about a month or two ago, when he called for the halt of these vaccines to be removed from the market, because he asked the FDA about the risk of integration, about the DNA contamination. They refused to give him an answer. Health Canada has refused to give an answer as well to the public. And the European Medicines Agency has refused. Now, they've all acknowledged that the DNA contamination is there and that they know about it. What they say is that it doesn't cause any clinical problems. It's not clinically relevant. And the fascinating thing is that Kevin McKernan discovered that there's an SV40 promoter, simian virus 40 promoter. Now, everyone says, well, you know, that's an oncogenic virus that can cause cancer. Well, it's only a piece of it. But it's in these DNA plasmids. It's in the DNA contamination. Well, apparently, one of the properties of the SV40 promoter is to deliver genetic material into the nucleus where it can easily integrate. So it actually, and it's apparently been discovered only in the Pfizer vials, not the Moderna vials. So apparently, Pfizer has this special additional feature where you've got the spike protein DNA plasmids that have the entire spike protein sequence. And you've got this additional engineered sequence, this SV40 promoter, that can actually deliver the DNA contaminants into the nucleus, ensure integration into your DNA so that you're producing spike protein indefinitely. The moment this is proven and proven conclusively, and I believe it will be in the coming months, I believe it will be proven this year. That's it. That's it for the entire mRNA vaccine platform.
Well, and the other thing is, how do I say this? I had put a post on Facebook about a month ago because I had concerns. I'm a new grandma, and I have this beautiful little baby that we've been blessed with. And yet there are family members that are jabbed, not the parents and not my side of the family. And so the issue is, what risk Are we putting this child under by friends or individuals, holding this baby, Googling them, smooching, you know, this baby? And so many people are addressing this. I was talking to other parents. And so I had posted on Facebook that we're in this new era of this fallout of this so-called pandemic, you know, of this attack against humanity, where our elderly especially, they were isolated, they were put in the homes, they couldn't visit their children or their grandchildren unless they took the jab. So now we have all these injected grandparents who can't wait to see their grandchildren again. There are many parents who chose not to get the jab nor give it to their children. And I said, now we need to have a new conversation. Families are finally healing. They're finally coming together again. But now for those that got the jab, they need to also take responsibility as to the contact. How can we minimize any harm? Could it be that you can just hug your grandbabies up like crazy, but maybe don't make that physical contact with them with smooches on their cheek? Because right now we just don't know how this is being transmitted. And am I out of line here, Dr. Mackey, or do you find that based on what we're experiencing and what we're physically seeing with unvaxxed people? I have numerous people in my life who are definitely 100% still being very, very much affected by those, even going to the grocery store, or heaven forbid, Costco. I'm banned from Costco, but I mean, you're in pack with a lot of people in a space. Yeah. And with a lot of jab people, and then coming home and being just knocked right out. I'm not making this up. This is absolutely physically happening.
This is a legitimate concern. And I think you raise an absolutely legitimate concern, because we don't know the long-term impacts of exposure to shedding. We don't know who's being exposed to how much, what they're being exposed to. So obviously long-term, you're going to be exposed to the spike protein, because the mRNA, you know, as far as we know, stays in the bloodstream for only about a month. But what is the long-term effect of exposure to these exosomes with the spike protein? Nobody knows. Some people are more sensitive to this kind of exposure than others. Mm-hmm. And of course, a baby's going to be, you know, quite probably sensitive to that kind of exposure. So I think what's going to happen is we're going to move into this area where the evidence of harm is going to be so overwhelming that it'll be very difficult to ignore. And the mainstream will try to ignore it as long as possible. But you're probably going to have clinics spring up all over the place that are going to be testing, offering tests, blood tests for the spike protein antibodies, maybe even integration. I mean, a cancer geneticist, Philip Buchholz in University of South Carolina, is actually offering the vaccinated to send him samples, and he'll test it for integration. He's doing testing right now.
Oh wow! Is he handling people from Canada or only within the United States?
I think he did. He privately told me that if I want to send him patients, that he'd be more than happy to test them. I think Lindsay is having her testing done as well. I think she may have sent him some samples as well. This is the nurse who's very outspoken on Twitter that you were talking about earlier. And so this is going to be where this is all heading, is that you will have labs or private companies are going to start offering tests for spike proteins, circulating spike protein in your body. And that's really what you're concerned about shedding. Now, of course, if you've got, you know, your heart is loaded with spike proteins, or your liver is loaded, or your spleen, or your bone marrow is loaded with spike proteins, that's a problem. You may not be able to detect that with a blood test. And of course, that's a long-term problem for the person, for the vaccine-injured person, because they'll be developing the inflammation, autoimmune diseases, maybe neurological diseases or cancer. However, if you have circulating spike protein or portions of the spike protein, the S1 subunit, for example, well, you're going to be shedding that. You're going to be shedding that. There's no question of that. You could do a blood test to see if you actually have those things circulating, and then maybe take steps. You know, we can talk about the spike protein detox protocols. That's going to be big as well. So I think that's where this is headed, is there's going to be a big push towards developing tests, because we can't know. Even from the vaccine batches, people took different numbers of vaccines, people mix and match vaccines. You're not going to be able to tell. You need a test. You need some kind of a diagnostic test. It's going to have to be a blood test, at least initially, to see if you're still producing spike protein indefinitely, because I do believe that some people are producing spike protein indefinitely. Now, in these cases where you have a baby and you're worried about a person, you know, this is where families are going to have to figure out. People will have to stop complying with taking booster shots. Because if you've taken a booster shot recently, let's say in the past 6 months, you're going to be, that person is going to be at highest risk of shedding whatever they were injected with in the past 6 months. I believe beyond 6 months, there's still the risk of integration, and we need to figure out who's had these integration events and treat them. And those people are still going to be producing and shedding spike protein probably indefinitely. But the highest risk is going to be in the first month and certainly in the first 6 months. So, you know, you may want to ask your family members, have you had a booster shot recently? And if you had a booster shot recently, maybe they have to wait 6 months before they see the child or the baby, right?
Well, and we may find out that it's going to be longer than that when they do more research, right? From what I'm hearing
longer,
and what we're experiencing, you know, as far as my loved one is concerned, who is being hit by this regularly. But, and I want to make sure that our viewers understand, I'm not saying this with judgment. People were deceived into taking this, but it comes a time when you've got to stop, and hopefully, you know, you've come to that point. But if not, I'm asking you, I'm appealing to you to have the wherewithal and the consideration to say, okay, I don't know how my body at this point is affecting my loved ones, so I want to take precautions. We're not saying don't see your loved ones. I was watching a video last night that was sort of a compilation of what we had experienced during the height of COVID lockdowns, where grandparents, kids were wrapped in suits going and hugging or plastic or all the ridiculousness and craziness that was going on when they were safest to be in contact with each other. Now it's not so safe anymore based on this threat of shedding. I would like to, just as we close off, you had just mentioned the spike proteins. I want to share Action for Canada's page. And on the under COVID-19 in our menu, if you go down to the treatment section, you will see Bax Spike Protein Detox. And we've had this page available previously, having Dr. McCullough on the show. And there is evidence that the potential of using the protocol, we'll just scroll down, of nanokinase, bromelain, curcumin. I know there's some talk about nicotine. Anyways, just dive into this information, look into it, start taking the treatments, because it is apparently helping people with the breaking down the spike proteins in the system. Now, Dr. Mackey, you also have been doing your research, and you have a little bit of a different spike protein protocol. And I've requested that once you can possibly make that available to me, we will add it to this page, because I want it to be as accessible as possible to as many people. So I'll just stop sharing that screen right now. And then if you can just tell us about your protocol and what you have investigated and potentially could recommend with the intent that hopefully this will help people.
Dr. Peter McCullough has a very good protocol. He calls it the base, sort of a base spike protein detox protocol. And it's, I believe it's a good starting point for people who don't know where to go, where to start. He's got three elements to it: nattokinase, bromelain, and curcumin. And I'll describe sort of why he chose those in his basic protocol. My approach to spike protein detox is a bit broader than that. I believe you have to incorporate more things. Especially if you've been vaccine injured and you're suffering from any kind of vaccine injury, you're going to have to approach this more broadly. And so I can sort of give you sort of a quick summary of how I approach, or how I would approach, spike protein detoxification. And I start with long-term fasting. And this is the reason why I start with a long-term fast, something like a 72-hour water fast. I'm planning to do a 5-day water fast, and write about that. I've published on the 72-hour water fast. It's actually been my most popular Twitter post and Substack article. It's gotten over 5 million views at this point, I believe. It's been, you know, shared. It's actually pinned to my Twitter page at MacusMD. And then people can go and into the Substack article and read more in depth. Why fasting? Well, 72-hour fasting, a water fast, so nothing but water for 72 hours, maybe a little bit of electrolytes, salt. The reason is that 72-hour fasting, what it does is it stimulates autophagy. Autophagy is the body's own process of clearing damaged cells, cells that have been damaged by the spike protein, immune cells that have been damaged by the vaccine, and even precancerous cells or even cancer cells that are developing that you may not know about. So autophagy is the body's way of clearing damaged cells from the system. Once you enter ketosis, you start to enter ketosis at hours 16 to 18. Autophagy kicks in at about 24 to 36 hours is when it starts to kick in. That's why intermittent fasting of 16 to 24 hours is not enough. The autophagy will be barely getting started. And if you're doing just intermittent fasting, you will actually not get that benefit of the body clearing all these damaged cells from the system. So you have to do at least 48 to 72 hours. 72 hours is recommended to get the maximal benefits. Now, so that's 3 days. You could go 4 days, 5 days. You could even go 7 days. But the incremental benefit after that is fairly minor. You get the maximal benefit of 72 hours. Your body's clearing damaged cells, so this is extremely important for the vaccine injured, those who have elevated risk of cancer. And the body also starts to produce stem cells and starts to release those stem cells and deliver them to the parts of the body where you need them. Maybe you need stem cells delivered to the heart. Maybe you need them delivered to the joints or muscles or certain damaged areas of your body. So you get that additional benefit as well. Actually, Dr. Paul Merrick, FLCCC, has published recently on fasting, this long-term fasting. That's where I start my detox. You have to do fasting. Now, people will say, well, how often do I do it? If you're not vaccine injured, if you're just worried about the occasional shedding, you're unvaccinated, you could do it once a season. You could do it once every couple of months. If you've been vaccine injured, you probably want to do it several times a month. It's not going to fix you in one shot. You're going to need to do it a number of times. You're going to need to do it repeatedly. And some people report tremendous improvement in their vaccine injuries just with several of these 72-hour or 3-day fasts, water fasts. Don't take any supplements during that. Don't take anything that may break the fast. Basically, it's water, maybe some electrolytes like salt. And you could take black coffee, which stimulates the autophagy process, or tea, but nothing in it. You're basically trying to avoid anything that would break the fast. Those things will not break the fast. So that to me is actually the cornerstone of any spike protein detox protocol. Now, again, no one's going to make any money recommending fasting. So you're not going to see, a lot of people recommending it. But that's where I start. That is the key. That is the anchor. And then you can start looking at supplements, and you have to categorize them: supplements that break down the spike protein and supplements that block the spike protein from doing damage, but may not necessarily break it down. So the category of supplements that break down the spike protein are natokinase, derived from fermented soybeans. These are enzymes that actually break down the spike protein, also break down blood clots, also break down amyloid, which may be a component of some of these white rubbery blood clots that the embalmers are taking out of people who've died suddenly. And they also break down prions, which could be settling in the brain. This is from the spike protein sequence, mRNA sequence. There's actually prion domains in there that when they get translated, they create these abnormal proteins that can actually accumulate in your brain, cause early Alzheimer's, and at worst case scenario, cause Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is mad cow disease, prion disease, which can kill you. I mean, that's 100% fatal disease that some vaccinated people are coming down with. So it'll break that down as well. I think that's why Dr. Peter McCullough has this in his protocol, because it is such a key enzyme to break all of these things down. Now, that there's natokinase, bromelain is also an enzyme that's derived from the pineapple plant, mostly from the stem of the pineapple plant, has more bromelain than the fruit. And then again, another key enzyme that sort of complements natokinase breaks down the spike protein. And this is two of the three elements of Dr. McCullough's base detox. What he's trying to do is break down the spike protein. Now, if you've had an integration event, you basically have to be on these things, you know, for the rest of your life until we find something different, because you're going to be producing spike protein all the time. So it's not a cure, it's a mitigation strategy if you've had integration events, but very important. Some people have also looked at other enzymes like serrapeptase or lumbrokinase. So these are the four enzymes that are known to break down the spike protein. So you'll take one or maybe a couple of these. And like I said, Dr. Peter McCullough has had two of these in his protocol. Then you come to the next category, and this is the spike protein blocking. Something that blocks the spike protein from, and once it blocks the spike protein, it prevents the free radical formation, the oxidative reactions, and the damage that the spike protein does to mitochondria, for example. And the most important spike protein blocker, in my estimation, is ivermectin. Ivermectin blocks the spike protein and blocks it very efficiently. And that is why it's so useful in treating COVID-19. And it may actually be why it's useful in treating turbo cancer. And so it's the most well-known spike protein blockers, ivermectin. But there are other spike protein blockers like quercetin, like olive leaf extract, like black seed, also known as Nigella sativa, Artemisia annua, white pine needle tea that some people drink, dandelion root, and curcumin. So this is the third element in Dr. Peter McCullough's protocol, is something that blocks the spike protein and tries to prevent it from doing damage. I might have missed some, but let me go over that again. Ivermectin, quercetin, probably fisetin would work as well. That's sort of like a stronger quercetin. You've got Nigella sativa or black cumin seed, olive leaf, very powerful, and it has a lot of anti-cancer effects as well. Artemisia annua, so you're going to see a lot of people, especially from Asia, they post about artemisinin, but that's derived from Artemisia annua. You want the whole plant, basically, and you want to because, you know, that has, again, incredible properties fighting the spike protein. And it's been attacked by the WHO. The WHO actually said, oh, don't use the plant. We've got a drug derived from Artemisia annua, but don't use the plant, right? Well, use what they tell you not to use, right? And again, if you're more on the herbal side of things, you don't want supplements, you want to, you know, specifically deal with herbs, pine needle, and it's usually drank as pine needle tea, and dandelion root. Again, right. Anti-spike protein activity. Okay, so now you've covered the spike protein. Now, what you need, and this is very crucial, is you need a powerful antioxidant. So you need vitamin C or NAC, N-acetylcysteine, as a very powerful antioxidant. You need to have that as part of your protocol, because you're trying to clean up the damage. So you're trying to not just get rid of the spike protein, but you're trying to actually clean up the damage that the spike protein is causing to your mitochondria, which is causing chronic fatigue syndrome, brain fog. You're trying to clean up any kind of free radical damage that can then damage your DNA and put you at higher risk of cancer. So you need some powerful antioxidant as part of your protocol. Then I say you need something to strengthen your immune system. Vitamin D is the key to this. And a lot of people are vitamin D deficient. You need to get your vitamin D levels up. It's protective against cancer as well. Certain cancers, high vitamin D levels, of course, it's going to protect you against future infections and so on. So you need vitamin D. Melatonin, for example, stimulates production of cytotoxic T cells. So melatonin supplementation is also very good for someone who's been vaccine injured, because now you're actually trying to re-stimulate those immune cells that have been damaged or rendered completely non-functional by the spike protein. So that's another element that I believe is very important as part of your approach. Lastly, I would say, in terms of diet, you want to move towards a ketogenic diet. As I said, you want to eliminate as much sugar and flour from your diet as possible. Especially, our flour is poisoned here in North America. I can tell you, the flour in other parts of the world, the bread tastes different. I don't know if it's glyphosate or if it's other you know, of these chemicals they spray on the fields here in North America, these pesticides. But if you can eliminate as much sugar and flour from your diet as possible, that's going to give you, not only is it going to reduce inflammation, which is a lot of the damage that the spike protein and the vaccine do, is inflammation. Inflammation and, of course, autoimmune processes. And so fixing your diet can actually really help you reduce that inflammation and that damage. It also reduces your risk of cancer as well, because, as I said, cancer thrives on sugar. You don't want to be feeding those precancerous cells either. Exercise, also very crucial, however dangerous as well. If you've been COVID vaccinated, there's very high incidence of subclinical myocarditis, and that puts people at risk of arrhythmic events and potentially sudden cardiac arrest and sudden cardiac death. This is why we still see athletes collapsing on the field. This is why we still see people dying in their sleep, is because of this undiagnosed subclinical myocarditis. Dr. Peter McCullough talks a lot about this. Dr. Asim Malhotra as well, both of them cardiologists. This is still happening, and it's still happening at record levels. And so you have to be very careful with vigorous exercise. You may want to have some kind of a cardiac workup before you do any kind of vigorous exercise, or take something that will protect the heart and actually treat the subclinical myocarditis, like taurine. Taurine is an amino acid, a supplement that you can buy for $10 a bottle. And it's used in Japan, actually, for heart patients, patients who are in heart failure and who have all kinds of heart issues. It reduces inflammation of the heart. You want to have taurine on board. The reason why you want to have NAC on board as an antioxidant is it reduces inflammation of the brain. It reduces inflammation in the lungs. So people that end up, you know, who are vaccinated, who have sort of chronic lung issues, or if you have long COVID and you've been infected with COVID several times and you have chronic lung issues, you want to be taking NAC. So this is kind of my more global approach to spike protein detoxification, because it covers a lot of the different areas and a lot of the different damage that people suffer. So you can start with a good base detox, like Dr. Peter McCullough's, you know, protocol with the natokinase, bromelain, curcumin, understand why he has those as his base detox, but it's not enough. It's not nearly enough. You need to have a more global approach, and you need to address all of these different problems that the spike protein causes.
Well, I really appreciate that. I think what I'm going to do is take that whole clip and we'll make a video out of it, and we're going to put it on the protocol page so that people can hear firsthand, because you covered a lot of information there, and just medically giving us insight as to how all of this works together and how it affects the body. And so, Dr. Mackey, I so appreciate having you on the show. I really believe that this program is going to help a lot of people, answer questions, give some direction for people to start treatments, and hopefully we're going to be able to help them impact their own well-being by taking these steps to protect themselves and to be proactive. I think even us as unvaccinated people need to be listening to what you say about flour and sugar and making sure our bodies are strong and resilient, because we don't know the long-term effects or how real the effects are of the shedding and other issues that we're dealing with. So thank you so much for coming on. We understand turbo cancers better now. We understand, you know, the big pharma and the upcoming plans of their implementation of this cure, this vaccine, maybe not cure, but this cancer vaccine. And of course, what's driving that, which is finances. And of course, the UN agenda as well, to possibly do in as many citizens around the world as possible. We can't put that aside. And then, of course, the treatments, ivermectin, fenbendazole, and then the information that you just covered as well. So that's been a big show. It's great information, and I can't wait to get this out to the public. So for those of you who are viewing, please give us a thumbs up on Rumble. Join us and provide us a comment. Follow Dr. Mackey's. It's Dr. Mackey MD on Twitter and Substack, I believe, is your handle. Is that correct?
Yeah. So people can follow me on Twitter at MackisMD, MAKISMD, and then on Substack, MackisMD.substack.com. They can even follow me on Instagram, WMacusMD. I'm very limited what I can post on Instagram because I'm trying to keep that account alive. So I don't talk about vaccines or treatments and so on. I just post pictures, and it's usually the sudden unexpected deaths or vaccine injuries that Instagram hasn't really attacked yet. But, you know, if I can just sort of leave and finish my thoughts, my overall recommendation would be there's really two things I think people really need to do. One is stop taking the shots, stop taking, you know, the vaccines, whether it's the flu shots, whether it's the COVID shots. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into sort of the childhood vaccine and vaccine schedule. I know that's a very problematic area as well. I think for new parents, it's a very difficult time. You're probably better erring on the side of stopping all vaccines. That's probably the best case scenario. But again, I don't want to be giving anybody advice on that. That's a very personal decision. But stop complying, stop taking the shots, any of the mRNA shots. And as you said, be proactive with your health. Whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, we all have to be proactive with our health. Take some of these approaches to protect yourself, protect your loved ones. That's I think the best way you can sort of approach your health is by being proactive.
Right. Yeah, thank you for that. Absolutely. When you were talking about childhood immunization, that's a whole other show. We've done a couple on them, actually. And when we're talking about putting foreign products into your body, of course, one of the adjuvants is a metal substance, and that's in the immunizations. It is, remind me what the adjuvant is that they're adding. It is to the vaccines.
There's aluminum, there's formaldehyde, there's all kinds of things, but yeah, it's those are problematic for us, absolutely.
So the childhood immunizations, once they include COVID-19, are somewhere at 108 doses. I mean, that's toxicity going into our children's bodies. Absolutely. That's the heightened rate of autism and all kinds of other diseases and
autoimmune diseases, chronic diseases. Absolutely. I mean, those are all skyrocketing as well. That is a huge problem. I agree.
So because you brought it up, I'm just going to share a page that we have for a moment, because this may be the first time that parents are hearing or considering that maybe childhood immunizations are a problem. Under current issues on Action for Canada's page, if you go to childhood vaccines, you can investigate this, educate yourself. You can see the statistics. There, we're finally starting to have studies done comparing the vaccinated to unvaccinated. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has been on, as well as Dr. McCullough. Vaccine Choice Canada is a wonderful organization who provides information. They've been at this, I believe it's for over 30 years. Trying to warn people of the harms of the immunizations for children. There's huge hesitation now towards the vaccines, and as far as legal actions and things have gone across the country, because we're undoing a lot of the damage that was done by the pharmaceutical companies. And I was talking to Rocco recently, our lawyer, and he said, you know, one thing that we've accomplished by filing these legal actions is now vaccine hesitancy used to be about 3%, where there was 3% of Canadian population said, I'm never getting a flu shot. And now it's anywhere between 20 and 30%. And so we would like to see that number go higher. But anyways, Dr. Mackey, thank you. Thank you for being on the show. I would welcome you to come on anytime. Give me a call if you've got something new that you think is critical for the public to hear. Give me a call and we'll have you back on the show. So thank you so much.
I'd be happy to. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us. That's an amazing show that we've had, an interview with Dr. Mackey. I think he has provided such essential information in this day and time as people are struggling with turbo cancers and other illnesses. All right, there we go. Okay, so Rob Anders, he's actually a former MP for 16 years. It's been a while since he was a sitting MP, but this man is well-versed in the central bank digital currency. So I'm very excited about having him on the show next week. He has a presentation ready for us. And so again, sign up for the weekly actions so that on Sunday night you get the information so that you can register and join us next week. All right. And to finish up, we have the Bible verse is from Psalms 9-13. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you. I really want this to be a little hopeful message at the end of all of this, because I know as upsetting as it is to see what's happening to our children, to hear about our housing, to hear about the infiltration of, you know, all of these Islamists who want to take over and hurt us, I have peace on my soul because I know that God is completely in control. So if you don't know Jesus, if you haven't asked him in as your personal Lord and Savior, I'm again this week going to say, call out to him so that you can have a peace that passes all understanding. God is giving us an opportunity to get right with him. So I just want to encourage you that, you know, there is no need for us to be working in a state of fear every day or depression. What we need to know is we have hope in Jesus Christ. He is fully in control. We need to get right with him. And then, but we do have a duty to be actively involved. It doesn't mean we sit home on our sofa and wait for somebody else to take care of this, all right? Never throughout history has that happened. And there were many wars throughout history where Christians had to stand up to defend the innocents. And right now that is our children and the future for our country. So it says, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. In their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and the cobra, the young lion and the serpent you shall trample underfoot. And I put on the armor of God every morning. I thank God my feet hit the floor. I know that he is with me. I know that I'm going to trample on cobras today. I know that I'm calling out great evils and the devil himself, who comes as the great deceiver, disguising himself as peaceful religions and in other ways, because then those individuals never receive Christ in eternity. And the only way to God and to salvation is through Jesus Christ, his son. He sacrificed so much on that cross for us. We've just come through Easter. We're just going through Passover. And that is the way, the truth, and the life. And so I just love you all, and I want to just keep proclaiming the truth. And so that one heart at a time, you know, will come to know him as their Lord and Savior. Now, we're going to end on a little bit of a different note. I came across this little guy on Facebook the other day, even though I'm banned. I don't know how I got it. Every 30 seconds, I'm banned on Facebook. And so anyways, this little guy was in a church. Somebody videotaped him. It was going as viral. And my heart just fills with joy. And I want you to have hope and joy as we move forward. Join with Action for Canada. Get a chapter going. We really are on the winning side of things. No matter how bleak it's looking right now, we're having huge wins. Okay, so God bless you. God bless Canada. And we shall see you next week. Oh, all of the little rights might just be near.
Today's episode was sponsored by Galatians 5:1 Freedom Coffee. Galatians 5:1 is the first freedom-fighting coffee company focused on bringing unity back into community by bridging the divide with gourmet coffee. It goes beyond fueling the fight for freedom. Action for Canada receives 10% of all coffee sales made. Galatians 5:1 offer a wide selection of coffee products. Go to Galatians51freedom.coffee to choose your own personal coffee experience made just for you.